from the campus of Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington. You're listening to the G Suite Podcast, where we discuss all things Zag business.
Claudia Rios Jordan is the Graduate Academic Advisor for the School of Business Administration, where she advises over 300 graduate students across the MBA, MBA AIE, MAC, MTax, and MSBA programs. She tells a story of perseverance, leaving Mexico at age 7, working in orchards of Central Washington, pursuing college and graduate degrees, and a teaching position in Japan before landing at GU.
Why, hello, hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I've had better days.
You're still a little under the weather, it sounds like.
I am.
Me too. The good news, like I told you the other day, I've only been fighting this for like a month. So,
okay.
If I gave it to you, Claudia, you're just getting started. You're welcome in advance.
Great.
I like, let's just blame it on your kids. That's kind of my move. So, Claudia Rios Jordan joining us for the podcast today. And Claudia is our, what's your official title with the Graduate School of Business?
Graduate Academic Advisor.
Okay. And you also are very involved in pretty much everything we do around here as far as MBA, AIE, and all the promises I make that need to be fulfilled. You are the backstop, the savior, if you will. So I appreciate you very, very much. But we're not here to talk about that yet. We're here to talk about you and your journey. And take me from the beginning, Claudia. Growing up, I think you eventually landed in Spokane, but where were you at before that?
Before Spokane, I was in Pateras, Washington.
All right. Lovely Pateras.
Yes, Apple Country.
And so how old were you when you came to Spokane?
18.
18. Okay, so high school in Pateras. Interesting. My mom's from the middle of the state. I don't know the geography that well, but she spent some time in Sunnyside and Yakima, even as far north as Chelan. But and we've talked about some life lessons learned in Pateras, and it resonated with me because my mom had similar stories about working in the orchard.
That's correct. During my high school time, I held multiple jobs, actually. So I did yard work, just like any other student, you know, trying to just get some money. But my main income came from the orchard. So in the summer, that was one of the rules that my parents set, was that during school, I had to stay in school and do sports. But then once school is done, then I would go and get a job wherever I could. And one of my main incomes was from the orchard.
Yeah, my dad was very much the same way. I always had to get a summer job. I think probably when I was about 14, and I kind of slow walked it one summer. And so he got one for me, and he told me, he goes, "You got a week to get a job or I'm going to get one for you." And, it was in drywall. And I learned pretty quickly that, kind of like what you told me the other day about, hey, studying's not such a bad thing after you've done a little bit of some of that physical labor. So, and you were just for the harvest, you're just working for the harvest, summer job, picking fruit. Was it just apples or did you guys do peaches and?
No, I did cherries also. So yeah. I had cherries and apples.
Yeah, I would think cherries would be harder. Maybe there's a rake for that. I guess there's probably a rake for the cherries.
I wish. It almost like huckleberries. Got to get it. We can.
Oh, man. Wow. A labor of love, I suppose, for huckleberries. That's a lot of and you got to find them first on that side. And so, and then you were born in Mexico City. Is that right?
Morelia, Michoacán.
Okay. Very, very nice. And then your parents moved up to the States when you were two-ish. Is that
seven? I was seven.
Okay. Seven. So that's a bit of an adjustment for a seven-year-old.
Yes, I would say, I always tell my parents that they lied to me because of the fact that, you know, when you're seven, you don't know distance, you don't know, you know, how far things are. And to me, my dad had lived in the United States for a while. And so I didn't grow up with my dad being with us for, until, you know, he would come and go. And then the last time I remember, he came home and he said, "Hey, would you guys like to go to the United States?" And I said, "Sure, Dad," because I thought United States was around the corner. Totally. And so I said goodbye to my grandma, you know, like, "See you next week, Grandma." And then we made it to the United States. Wow. And then obviously when I came here, I'm like, wow, you know, it was quite an adjustment. You know, the fact that I couldn't see my family members, the fact that it was so open. I mean, we were used to, we never had a car growing up. It was always walking. You know, transportation, we always had to take a van or a bus. We call it a combi. And then, and now in order to get somewhere, we had to buy a car. So that was a big deal for us, you know, like, oh my gosh, Dad, can you drive a car? How do you start it? It was very foreign to me. I mean, just the concept of having a car. And then we just thought we were living the life, you know, in the back of the car. It was just my sister and I at that time. Yeah. And I mean, it was a Lincoln Mercury something. It was an old grandfather car that we were just like, yes, this is the best thing ever. So anyway, and then school came around and we decided, you know, let's just immerse Claudia into the classroom. And that was so in Mexico, I attended a private Catholic school, and my mom was the janitor there, and she would get me private English lessons there. So I knew a very little when I came to America about English. So English was not new, but it was definitely brand spanking new because of the fact that everybody spoke some foreign language. And so, yes, immediately I immersed myself in the classroom. My best friend was Pavel. He was Russian. And the reason why he was my best friend is because English was foreign to him as well. And so we bonded together because we both had, you know, English to struggle with.
Wow. And I imagine and maybe I'm wrong here, but in Pateras at that time, there's probably not a whole lot of assistance for students that have English as a second language like you have today. So you're basically just going into English class and trying to figure it out.
Correct. We actually did have English as a second language classroom, and it was just this tiny little closet that got turned into a classroom. But I refused. I did not want to be in that. I wanted to be fully immersed. And actually my parents had a petition for me to stay in the classroom because of the fact that I felt like I would gain more from being fully immersed with the students.
You know, that's interesting. Because they will accommodate different languages. And I wonder if that slows down, you know, the picking up English for some of these students. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but that's an interesting perspective that your parents had, I guess, on.
Well, it was mostly me, actually. My parents was very set on like, no, let's get you baby steps. I'm like, no, let's do this. I'm ready. I want to. I want to stay in the classroom.
Wow. So how long until you felt like you had a pretty good grasp of what was going on? Like a month? At seven, you can just absorb everything.
Yes, exactly. And actually, I excelled in the classroom. I was only in second grade at the time. But I mean, I picked it up right away because, again, I was surrounded by English 24 hours a day. And the reason being is because when I would go home, I would watch after school TV shows. Yeah. And so I learned English watching Star Trek.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Wow. Yeah. I heard a similar story. There was a priest in Florence. His name was Father Bruno. He was not a Jesuit, but to make a long story short, his first assignment after he left the seminary was in Boise. And he said the bishop gave him a book. Now at the time he spoke Spanish, Italian, German, and French. And no English. And he said the bishop basically just gave him a book and he sat and watched soap operas all day trying to figure out what was going on. So that's interesting. Maybe I'm picking up tips for my Italian here. Maybe I should get some Italian TV or something like that for when I'm in Florence in the spring. So that's incredible. Now, was there a fair number of, I would imagine there's a decent Hispanic population. So there's other Spanish speakers around Central Washington and Pateras, right? Like, did you meet friends and that you could
not at that time. In my classroom, there's only two Mexican girls in the whole school. I think there was less than 10.
Wow. Okay. Well,
now though, when I come back, I'm like, holy smokes, we used to be at the minority. We're the majority now.
Awesome. And so your parents are still at the Terrace?
My parents are still there.
Okay. How's their English? They're doing well.
I would say my dad is very, very much has excelled. My mom, on the other hand, she still very much struggles with, especially when she talks to my kids. But like I said, it's all about pushing yourself and forcing yourself in that language. When my mom comes, I expect for her to fully speak in English to my parents, to my kids. Now my kids though speak Spanish to her.
Awesome. And so you're teaching your kids Spanish, and you know, or you speak
yes.
Spanish. That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I remember my great grandfather came from Croatia, and I think my grandfather told me he finally got to a point where he could read the newspaper in English. Then he was pretty proud of that. Now, I think probably like a lot of immigrant communities, they just all huddled up and lived together in their little enclave and kind of had their own little, you know, micro culture. And it wasn't the kids, they're the ones that kind of got out and did stuff. So, okay. So Mexico City to Pateras. Was Pateras your first landing spot or did?
Yes.
Okay. And so I imagine your dad maybe had been, was your dad when he was in the US, was he doing agricultural work?
Yes.
So he knew where to go and what to do. And okay. And then high school, you graduate. What's next?
Well, actually, so my senior year in high school, I had, you know, great plans to go to college, just like everybody else in the classroom. I applied to Central Washington, to Eastern Washington University, to WSU. I got denied.
No.
I got rejected. And so when everybody else was getting offers and acceptance letters, I just kept getting rejection. And so at the end of my senior year at graduation, though, I did get scholarships, but I had nowhere to apply them to.
Oh, no.
And so that summer, while working in the orchard, actually, there was this sky blue Acura Integra that drove by. And I said to my dad, "Dad, I'm going to buy me a car." Well, actually, no, that was my freshman year. So that car, and so they'll come into the story. So my senior year, I'm in the orchard and, you know, I'm talking to these other ladies and workers. And I'm thinking like, man, is this what it's going to be the rest of my life? Like, is this it? Because obviously I can't get into college. And then by the end of the summer, I had a friend, so Tara, who had moved to Spokane and she attended Ferris. And so I came home that day. It was just, you know, boiling hot. I was sweaty. I was muddy and dirt all over. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go to college. I have no idea where or how, but I packed up my car, and this is the Acura Integra. I packed it up. And the next morning I said to my parents, I'll see you whenever I think I'm going to go to college. And so I drove in the direction of what I thought was Spokane. I had no idea how to get to Spokane. I just drove. And then I got to Spokane and I got to Thor over here in Freya. And I called my friend. I said, "Hey, do you think I could stay with your parents for a while? I want to go to college, but I'm not quite sure." And she's like, "Okay." She thought I was joking, because again, she thinks I'm in Pateras. And so I didn't know Spokane very much, so she had come and get me. But either way, so that was a Friday. And so then I said, "Hey," she was going to Eastern at the time. And so I said, "I know Eastern won't take me, but, you know, what else, what's available?" And so between her and I, we just sat down and I said, "Hey, what's SFCC?" And so I applied. I actually went in. I said, "Hey, I'd like to attend. I have good grades." And they said, "Yeah, class starts on Monday." So I'm like, fantastic. So that was my ordeal on how to get to college. I wasn't in the cards, and I made my own passage.
Wow. So for the younger kids out there, this was before Google Maps.
Yes.
And also before cell phones. So you had to probably pull over and find a payphone.
Yes.
Dial her up. Yeah.
Yeah. I did not have a cell phone. I to this day, my husband says, you've made it to Pateras. Like, I'm terrible with directions. But yeah, somehow I made it to Spokane and I survived.
Wow. So, and then you mentioned the Acura. So you saw it as a freshman. Did you later buy that Acura that drove by or?
Yeah. So I bought it my freshman year.
Oh, okay. Okay. So saved up summer money, buy the Acura. Okay. You're rocking. That's before you could drive, unless you had an agricultural permit, I guess, but probably before you could drive.
Yes. That was my motivation to learn how to drive.
What, stick shift?
Yes.
Good, good. The classics. So if you rent a car outside the U.S., you'll be able to drive. Okay, so start at the falls. Okay, and you're underway. What would you decide to study?
Accounting.
Bless it. This is go on, so, go on.
In high school, I took accounting for 4 years actually, and that was because I had the ultimate best teacher, Mr. Greg Mooney. And so that was back when, you know, accounting was an option to take, which immediately I'm like, wow, like this is amazing. I love working with numbers and I excelled in it. And so at SFCC, they had a great accounting program. I did well with it until I got to financial accounting. And then for some reason, like it just didn't click. And then my professor wasn't very supportive. And so I kind of derailed and said, okay, I'll just focus in business in general because of the fact that, you know, I have a passion for accounting, but apparently I'm not meant to be an accountant.
Yeah, that's interesting. As a profession, we're working hard to kind of, we haven't done a good job historically at things like supporting people, be it at the firm as a manager or, you know, on some level it goes towards an accountant's nature, but that's super unfortunate because you have someone who's passionate about it, loves it. And then you just kind of get in an environment that's not very supportive and you lose them, but we still have you. So you study business. Okay. 2 years associate's degree. And then,
so at this time, I have been working at Mukagawa Fort Wright Institute as a resident assistant. And at that time, I was also working numerous jobs because I had to pay my way through college. So not only was I working there, but I was working several jobs there. So I was a library assistant, a computer lab assistant. And then I also worked on the South Hill at Scrapbook Paradise. And then I also worked at Keller Williams.
Okay.
So I was the front desk receptionist helping the realtors.
Okay. When did you sleep is the real question.
Yeah, no kidding.
What was Scrapbook Paradise?
So it was a scrapbooking store.
Like in Lincoln Heights or where was it at?
Yeah, we're currently at Trader Joe's. Wow. That strip mall.
Okay. What's sold in a scrapbook store? I don't know. Books, scrapbooks.
Yeah, paper, lots of paper, lots of scissors and stickers. My gosh, I was in heaven.
Wow.
And I excelled at being a salesperson, actually. So I rose up really quickly in that job because I was really good at selling. And that time I was 18, 19, almost 20. And I was offered the manager position until the owner realized how old I was.
Wow. Wow. You know, that's such a good point. I often get students asking me or making the comment, I don't have any business experience, but is retail is business experience, right? Learning how to be comfortable with talking to people about that, comfortable with rejection when they say no. You know, specifically on the accounting side, a lot of times I don't have any accounting or finance experience. I'm like, what'd you do? I'm a lifeguard. That's awesome. You're responsible.
Yeah.
That's you're building skill sets. So, okay. So you're accumulating skill sets pretty quickly and you're certainly perseverant. Okay. So you're there and then you're at Mukagawa. primarily, right? Or did you transition full-time to Mukagawa, or how did that work?
Not yet. I didn't transition into full-time until after my MBA.
Okay.
So this whole time, I'm still just part-time.
Okay. And then you have the associate's degree, and then you went somewhere to finish to get a bachelor's.
Yes. So while I was still at Mukagawa, I finished my AA, and the director, Marie Whalen, decided to continue to push me, mostly because, you know, she saw potential, and I myself, I'm like, what else can I do? And so she said, why don't you apply to Gonzaga? And Gonzaga was never in my radar, mostly because it was just too expensive. And since I was paying for this all by myself, that was like the least option for me.
Right.
But, you know, she said, go apply, go see what they can offer you. And so I did. It was just kind of like SFCC. I walked over to Gonzaga and I said, hey, I'd like to finish my 4 year here. And, you know, they looked at my grades and they said, yeah, I think we can do something with that. I'm like, great, fantastic. When can I start?
And they're like, on Monday, right? Or something.
Yes.
Like that. That's kind of how it works around here. So, and then were your parents would have to be pretty enthralled at this point? Like, hey, our daughter's moving onward and upward and getting a college degree. And
I would say so. I mean, again, first person to go to college, you know, I've always just gone with the flow. You know, my parents have always encouraged me, but it was more of like, we can only support you emotionally. And because it was just new territory and they didn't know, like, what else can we do for you? It was very much of like, okay, what are you up to now? Because again, to this day, I don't think they even know just how much money I spent in college.
Well, hopefully they're not listening. Then we won't tell them. But what courageous people. I mean, I always think of immigrants, you know, to pack up and leave the safety net of your home and go to a far off place. I mean, it's just terrifying to me to even think about. So,
yeah, well, to this day, just now that I'm a parent, I think, like, my gosh, what did I do to my parents to just pick up my car, pack it up and say, hey, I'll see you guys, and just letting me go without even knowing where I'm going.
Wow. Yeah. I feel like they must have through their experience and their determination deeper insights than I would, but I'd be terrified if my kids said that. Although we're the helicopter parents era. So maybe we're a little
bit better. Right.
So, you finish at Gonzaga in business
with some accounting, because again, I got into accounting again, but I guess I was just never pushed to continue and get an accounting major.
Who did you have for accounting?
Oh my gosh. So I was thinking about this and I don't remember any of my accounting professors, because my biggest contributors in my undergrad were actually Professor LaRosse.
Awesome.
Because I majored in marketing.
Awesome. Awesome. Great mentor to many, Peggy Sue. Okay. So engaged with her. She's doing awesome things. And I was going to ask you who's your favorite prop, but it sounds like, or most memorable prop, but it sounds like Peggy Sue's going to take it. Okay. And then you graduate.
Yes.
And then you go full time at Fort Wright. Is that right?
Yes. So when I graduated, I was still at Mukagawa. I was still not full time, mostly because I wanted to push myself further as far as, you know, I like school. I like learning. I'm a learner. I'm a natural learner. And so I started to think about more of like, okay, now that I have a BA, what else is there? And so I wanted to get a dual degree. I wanted to get an MBA and a JD.
Okay. Sounds
and
cheap.
So my senior year, I decided to be overly ambitious. And so during finals, I took the GMAT and the LSAT. at the same time.
Oh boy.
Without even studying. And obviously my grades weren't that great.
Right, right. It's hard. Those are tests that you have to get some exposure to kind of know how the test functions, right?
Yes, yes. And I think at that time, so Ginny Piskel was the director, and so I went to her and I said, hey, I really want to get this MBA, but unfortunately my GMAT wasn't that great. And she agreed, and she's like, well, why don't you come back in a year or so? But at the same time, I'm also thinking about what's next. And for me, it was more of a, I would like to go and travel the world and get to know something outside of the US.
Yeah.
And so at the same time, I also applied to be a representative for the Anishinaabe Sister City Association.
Awesome.
And so I got that job. Well, no, I hadn't gotten that job yet. I needed experience. And so I said, okay, well, that didn't go well. So far then, again, I'm getting more rejected. But I'm not, you know, I'm used to it. So I went back to Mukgawa and I said, okay, I'm done with school, but in order to continue with my job, I have to continue to be a student. And I can't get into the MBA. So I made a deal with the director that some way, somehow, I was going to get into the MBA program. And so that summer, I did nothing but study for the GMAT, because and so I put the JD on the hold, because again, like, I have to focus on one thing, on one thing only. And so the GMAT. And so I did. That was all I did in the summer. I quit some of my jobs. I only kept like three of them. And then I got a high enough GMAT score. And then I went back. I think. Yeah, Jenny Piskel looked at it, and she looked at me and like, are you sure this is your score? I'm like, yes, that's my score. And so she's like, okay, I you're in. I'm like, great. So that's how I got into the MBA program.
That's awesome. And for folks listening, the GMAT is now optional, I believe. Is that correct, Claudia?
Correct.
Yeah, I'll defer to you, yeah. And we found that the GMAT was not indicative or predictive of success in the any of our programs at the grad level, nor was it predictive of success in the professions. So we do leave it as an option, I think, for folks that if you do well, I think you can get some more scholarships, and it certainly can help us out with rankings. So, okay. Now, I recall you telling me living in Japan at some point. Are we at that point of the journey yet?
So during my MBA, I actually was a student at Mukagawa Women's University in Japan. I did a summer.
Okay.
I guess, yeah, a 1 month of summer in Japan.
Okay. Very cool.
So that was my first.
And you're married at this point, right?
No.
Not? Okay. All right.
No.
Keep going.
And so I went. I had two wonderful host families that I lived with. One was in the country and one was in the city. So I got to see both sides. It was, again, another time when I was a foreigner, different language to learn from, but I was comfortable because I've been there, you know, having to learn a new country, new culture, new language. It was new to me, but I mean, I was comfortable and I loved it. So I lived in Nishinomiya, traveled the family that I lived in the country, I had to travel for 2 hours to get to school each day by train and bus. And that was an ordeal. And I think they saw me as being a cautious student, but more of like, let's just go with it. And that made them nervous. And so whenever I would leave, they would give me a lanyard with some instructions in Japanese as far as like how, you know, to direct me in the right direction.
And also
on the back of it, on the back of it, there was also a map of like where I live.
Wow. Wow. So that's incredible. And the word, I believe it's gaijin. I don't think that's a bad word, right? It's when you're a foreigner, you're not Japanese, or I guess not of Asian descent. I found in my travels to Japan, they were very, very helpful. Almost feel bad for you, right? Now, I don't know what your experience was, but it's really hard when you get outside the city Because I, you know, I'm going to guess the bus stops did not have Roman alphabet characters, or I guess whatever alphabet's called. So you're like looking at symbols, right? The
kanji, yes.
Yeah, and the kanji symbols of all things. Wow. And 2 hours, you said 2 hours each way?
2 hours each way.
Wow.
So my host sister did that for 4 years while attending Mukagawa.
Wow. And you just, once for a month. So, but still, did you make it to an onsen at all?
I did. I did. And that was an interesting experience. They're just, you know, for me being so conservative and, you know, modest, it was very awkward the first time when everyone just starts taking off their clothes. And then I'm like, wow, that's my host mother.
Yeah, we're in the hot springs now, right?
That's so right.
And I imagine it was out in the countryside. I went to one in the city. So it was like in kind of a bathhouse kind of facility. But the ones in the countryside look a lot cooler, a lot more natural. And crazy, crazy experience for sure. Okay, so then Mukagawa, what were you studying there? Did they have business? Or was it business classes?
No. It was mostly just Japanese language.
Okay. Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're practicing your Japanese. Okay. Then back to Spokane and Mukagawa.
Back to Spokane. I finished my MBA. And then I applied for that Sister City Association again. Okay. I got accepted because of the fact that I had an MBA now. And then I decided to go back to Japan for a year. Actually, the intent was 5 years. The whole intent was to be there for 5 years as an English instructor.
Very cool. Okay, so and you're going to Nishinomiya.
To Nishinomiya, yes.
Nishinomiya, okay. Very interesting. It's quite the... Okay, so you're there, you're teaching just for a year. It's so culturally different and everything's so different. That's a heavy lift. So I'm admirable right now. So you're there ended up being there for a year.
I ended up being only for 1 year. I taught junior high for Koryo and Naruo Minami, both junior high. So one was like private top tier junior high and the other one was low income.
Okay. And you have using what little Japanese you have to kind of teach English.
Yes. So one of my main rules is as soon as you walk through the door, it's English only or there's penalties.
Wow. All right. I'm glad I wasn't in that class. I would not be able to make it as a Japanese student. Okay. 1 year there. And I imagine you're speaking pretty good Japanese by the time you're done. Pretty good grasp.
Well, I probably could have. But again, it was very much a lot of English conversation only with my students. It was only the professors that would force me to speak in Japanese.
Okay. Yeah. And then after a year back to Spokane.
Yes, I came back because this young man decided to propose to me. And uh-oh. So I came back to get married.
All right. And the rest is history there. Huh? And then now did you go back to Mukagawa at that point or?
Yeah. So that was my very first full-time job is when I came back from working in Japan that I got offered to work in the administration department. I did payroll HR.
Okay. So kind of getting back to the accounting roots.
Yes.
Okay. So then at some point, you have a family, start a family. What happens next?
Well, so I worked at Mukagawa for 5 years and then I started a family and I decided to stay at home. It was a priority for me to be there for my kids growing up.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. Having one of the parents there is I think very special and super hard. Having been the working parent in my house, it's such a relief to be able to escape that, you know. And then I think of the spouses that are staying at home and how it's a 24-hour job. It's certainly challenging. So, well, good for you guys. And then eventually, you find your way into the role of graduate academic advisor. Kids got old enough, I imagine, where they're doing stuff. You land the role here. And you've been, how many years have you been our graduate academic?
1 year, 6 months.
Okay. So if I'm an aspiring MBA student, what are some things I should know that, or you think they should know that they might not be thinking of with the program?
For sure, the one thing I would say is take your time. Don't be in a rush to get it done. That's one of my biggest regrets, actually, is that I went through the program super fast. Because again, my intention was to get an MBA so I can continue to be working at Mukagawa and then I could go and work in Japan. If that had not been an issue, I would have taken at least 3 years.
Okay. And you got done in a year and a half?
Maybe? Just like a year and like 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So don't be in a rush. Okay. Yeah. I think that can... And it's almost like a do as I say, not as I do, is what you're basically
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's me, like you were always
if anything, it was very much, you know, because again, all my classes were rushed as far as like, we got to get through it, you know, and I didn't get to retain a lot of the information. I don't think I felt like I soaked it all in. And just the networking, all the networking connections that I missed out, because again, I was just constantly... I didn't get to spend as much time on campus because I was working so much.
Right.
I was one of those students that just comes in, gets the work done, and I has to get somewhere to work.
Yeah. And sometimes it's more about the journey than the destination, right? And you can miss out on stuff if you're just trying to get to the end goal. I'm similar, when I was younger, I wanted to get to where I needed to be. That was my ultimate goal. And certainly at times I'm like, I probably should have taken a different approach. How many advisees do you have in total?
I believe I'm now at over 300.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot, a lot. And so you're advising that we have MBA, MAC.
MBA, MBA AIE, MSBA, MAC, the tax, and the online MBA.
Wow. So that's multiple programs to know the curriculum, to yes. know what different class content is. This is good for me because I know I'm not always the most communicative or detail oriented, and I'm probably not the easiest person to work with on some of this stuff. Fascinating. What's your favorite part about the role?
I would say that every day is a new routine. I mean, there is no routine. That's one thing, is that there is no routine. I'm very much a very routine person, but this has essentially broken my mold as far as I've learned to go with the flow, because every day is not going to go my way.
Especially with working with me, I'd imagine. What's the most annoying thing I do?
Make promises and you don't forget to tell me.
And I always forget to tell you.
You forget to tell me.
Yeah. I tell the student, no worries, no problem. And then the student comes to you 3 months later and you're like, Andrew, what is going on here? We can't do this. And I'm like, well, hopefully we can. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, I'm not the greatest at that. And you know, my job, I feel like, similar to yours, just the volume of stuff that's coming across your desk, and it's just trying to keep your head above water. I often forget to add you to the CC or just walk two doors down and say, hey, here's what's going on. But, oh, very cool. You know, when I think of kind of your story, I think it's a good one, in particularly in that, you know, everything didn't work out the way you wanted to, but you had perseverance after rejection and not, you know, things panning out ideally, but you never gave up, right? And you worked hard and you continue to do that. I mean, you were one of the hardest people working in this building by far. And you're certainly someone who is always interested in learning and growing. So I can appreciate that. What kind of advice would you give to graduating Zags? It could be undergrad, it could be even kids from the Falls or grad school. What advice would you give them as they kind of embark on the next phase in their life, adulthood?
I would say find what you like to do. what makes you happy before you try to do something that you won't succeed. Because if you find something that you like to do, you'll love it regardless. And if it's a worth, if it's a goal that is worth it to you, you'll make it happen one way or another, even if it's not a straight line. There's always different paths to it.
It's nice. Favorite American food?
Favorite American food?
I'm going to get to how good the food was probably in Mexico and then how bad the food is here ultimately. But let's go with favorite American food first.
Favorite American food? It's probably not even Americans because it's Italian. It's lasagna.
Yeah, which is delightful. Which is delightful. Did you miss, or is your mom or dad fabulous cooks growing up, or did you miss grandma's cooking when you came to the States?
Oh, no, actually, my parents are really good at cooking. That's one of the things actually that I never got around to learning is how to cook. My dad to this day makes fun of me because of the fact that my nose was always in a book.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Do you make it back to visit your grandparents at all? I imagine they may not be around anymore, but.
No, my grandma's still around. And on my dad's side, both of them are around too. No, I would say, I think I had more time to visit them when I was still in school. And now that I'm a parent, it's hard.
For sure. And you haven't taken your family back there yet?
Not yet.
Not yet. Someday, sometime.
Someday.
Show your kids where it all began and your husband. And how's your husband Spanish?
He tries. I think if anything, it's quite humorous to have him converse with my mom.
That's awesome. You should apply the same rule you apply to your mom. She's got to speak English to the kids. He's got to speak Spanish to,
yes,
to you or to the kids. I don't
That's
know.
Right. That's well, so. His listening is a lot better.
You know, it's funny how that works. Having been overseas and in an area where no English was spoken, comprehension is a lot higher than ability to speak and conjugate verbs correctly and things like that. So I was always one of just throwing verbs out there unconjugated, and hopefully the message would be received and no one would be insulted. So a little insight to how I cut corners there, Claudia. So. Well, very cool. Well, I'll just say, Claudia, I mean, it has been a privilege to have you on the team, and you're amazing, and you do awesome work, and you cover up a lot of the potentially drastic mistakes that I make. So I am forever in debt. And appreciate you joining us today. And we'll see you in the office probably later today.
All right. Well, thank you.
Cheers.
Bye.
This podcast has been a production of the Gonzaga University School of Business. It was edited by yours truly, Margie Allgaard. Go forth and set the world on fire, and go Zags.